Hello, this is a show from Radio. We are a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week we give artists a challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond. Are you up for it?
The Almanac of Breath.
Much is told, in the exemplar and sermons of the murky past, of a certain demon, he who would hover above monks at their mass many times each day. The monks, whether by the drooping of eyelids drawn down by the relentless loping of the liturgy of hours, or by that cardinal infraction of indifference they had not quite extinguished yet in their souls, or by some mortal distraction brought about by the pleasure of being bodies in choir, were wont to let skip their eyes and their tongues over the very words set down in their books. They were wont to speak aloud their prayers, only with sounds, syllables, or whole words missing, enough that to hear them may be to make little sense of the true word. In this way, willfully or not, did the monks' mouths betray them. And while such sins of omission may go unnoticed by the unlatined layman or the otherwise occupied priest, hear them indeed our demon did, and pluck them from the air. For these fragments of missing speech he collected and stuffed in his sack, the one seen bulging over his shoulder as he snuck twixt plainly draped monks and highly decorated ceiling, where spoken nonsense reverberated around day and night. No porter was this demon, nor churchkeeper. No, this rag-picker of language was gleaning unvoiced words for altogether punitive purposes. His uncharitable intention, it has been widely observed, was to gather up the slurred chants and missed inflections for presentation on the day when each slovenly speaker would finally meet the Maker, in order that the judgment may weigh more heavily against him. This treacherous creature is known by the name Tutivillus, or the Recording Demon. Treacherous indeed, though not himself infallible, our Recording Demon, having been witnessed by goodly saints looking after their devoted if imperfect followers in the monasteries, so seen, was laughed at and mocked away. At some time did he transform himself and assume new tools and expand his realm. Beyond the rich pickings of the choir moved he to the pews, and even out into the market. And setting down the sack of syllables, he possessed himself anew of parchment and quill, and now gave his attention over to the layman and laywoman. With an inkpot that never ran dry, our demon took up the task of recording all transgressions of idle voice, from the gossips in the sermon, to the quarrelers of the squares, the singers of washhouses and whistlers over fields. In this new form, the demon seemed especially to bother women who, so it is said, though hardly believed and even less proven, far more frequently than men engage in meaningless chattering, filling the air with painful screeching and scratching when they were expected to be silent in their toil. Thus the demon kept himself fairly occupied many a long day and eve, concerning himself overly with women's private business, as though only half a population were fit to communicate at all, or as though the life of a place did not run precisely on the circulation of knowledge through carefully attuned and directed tones of fair and knowing voice. But this reshaped demon, maligned as he was, came to fault, when finding his parchment full covered, yet with much more jangling to record, at the back of the chapel, during the slow progress of a particularly dull service, he attempted to stretch his parchment to make upon it clear space. Gripping its corners between claws and teeth with all his puny might, and in haste pulling full weight against the brittle aged sheet, he threw himself through the thick air and against the church wall, his mean bones themselves making such a clattering sound that the women, being observed by him, in turn noticed this foul creature, and as they gasped and wailed in hilarity at his fall, the writing upon the parchment dissolved in mean charcoal squibs, never to be counted against the women's many lived virtues. Thus further humiliated, Tutivillus, the recording demon, was further transformed. Degraded now to a figure of satire, no longer to be feared, and having need to keep abreast of contemporary recording methods, our demon was relegated to the gutters of the new printing houses. Here, lowly and marginalized, his only work was to bother the poor grimy print boys, upon whom he played petty and spiteful tricks, such as turning the typelet upside down or leaving ink smudges on their pristine pages. Itinerant and invisible as an elderly M-dash, his presence slowly degraded to the shadow of an overused spirit duplicator. His reputation as a hoarder of gossip, ceding the contemptuous title of the tittle-tattle given to tale-tellers. But little is heard of a vastly more aged creature who yet remains vivid and present to those few who know her and who think of her. She who has not changed with the tides, nor with man's tools, nor his cosmological sketchings, but remains today as steadfast in purpose as when she was first known and spoken, which is a time before record. It may be gathered that she has simply always been, ageless as the constellations by which we measure our own swift time, hour to day, day to year, year to generation. Perhaps because she knows well how silence is itself a most important sound, she goes about gently, neither rustling sack nor scratching quill, nor clunking lead, never making of herself a spectacle nor laughing stock as did Tutivillus. Perhaps it is that she is so little heard that she is so little heard of. Perhaps this is why she speaks not herself, but holds tongue until her words are so needed as to be fat drops of soft rain to thirsted ground. Like Tutivillus, her task is one of collection and selective redistribution. But she does not meanly take up the mistakes of the tongue or omissions of the mouth with which to confront the poor speaker upon his judgment. She listens intently not for slurred chants or for slothful jangling or vicious gossip, but for all sounds, both willed and not, heard by their target or not, meaning or not. But be there any non-meaning sounds? Again, though it may be said that a sound means nothing, all know that a sound means in the very least that it means, and often far more. She hears all. Words, sentences, thoughts half formed in the mouth or spirited up by other organs in sudden pleasedness or blush slow strife. It is said that she even hears the speech that is the motion of hands shifting in pockets, that latter additive grammar of vestments suitably having lately become her known attribute or emblem for its practical and private associations, or of weight shifting from one foot to another, or of the brow swiftly twitching upon the face. For if speech is not much more than the alteration of the flows and stops of breath, and if it is the breath that animates the entirety of the body, is it not then from the whole body that the voice comes forth, and that therefore a being is heard? And our creature does know that, aloud or not, the voice is that which communicates before all else the singularity of each being, and thus the very being itself. And in listening, she listens for the life breath that animates all desire, all contentment, all intention as expressed in breath. Thus, it is not the fragments of words that she collects, but all instances of breath towards speaking and thus towards action. And it is in her memory alone that she keeps them. Such is her utmost attention to her subjects that this memory alone will suffice. But what means she by such careful collection? In this constant and comprehensive acquisition has she compiled an entire library of all vocal expression, all motions of inhalation and exhalation. Indeed, the spirit possesses the full range of human aspiration, not for her own enrichment, nor with ill intent. This library of breath, held and expelled, she keeps for moments when one small instance may be required. When a speaker has need, she delivers a pause or sound, that her ward may be well heard and understood. So learned, so fluent, and so generous are her interventions, that they go almost always unknown to their speaker. She transmits the items of her airy collection unbidden, and so unthanked. This causes her no resentment. She cares not for acknowledgement, only to reward those of her wards whom she overhears hearing. Yes, it is said that she chooses speakers upon whom to bestow her favor by paying attention to how well they themselves listen. Those careful hearers who bite their tongue before they let it wag, those who await the end of a sentence before they feel they know it, those charitable interpreters of silence and sighs receive the good grace of our creature and benefit by understanding the pregnant atmosphere with which their own breath mingles. To these speakers with soft ears does she provide tacitly a clarity of voice and will. In tribute to this generous force is provided here a guide to the seasons of breath, acknowledging the possibility of observing the repeated occurrence of certain tendencies of speech throughout concurrent times of the cycle of the years and of the stars, taking into account received tales of our creature, and the knowledge that the more we might pay attention in her ways, the better she may deign to serve our own imperfect communications. End of an eve in the cosmic disco tumult. Sometime about midnight, the start of something new. New year, just another day, sleep. Fresh round of indecision. Emerging into the earliest hours from the depths of high nocturnal fantasy over the threshold. Teeth gritted against driving squalls, cold curling up through hems, down shivering collars and leaking out through frosted plackets. The immense force of a wind does not require of it a single or known direction. Immense energy, shape-shifting as uncertainty. In this wintry season, we should remember, it matters not what one chooses to start, but simply to. It may be tempting to stagnate, to become rooted through foot to icy ground, to let the dawn spin itself in one's direction, as if enough pause will determine that the thing happening is the thing one wants. But don't just stand there, say something. It matters not what one chooses to start by saying, but simply to. In the end, all begins with ah, or ah. Pressed between tight belly and creased brow, the mouth parts, the decisions will rush forth.
The season of...
By now, the words are forming from the mouth. The squall settles down to listen. In darkness, feeling north, a thought of glassy dawn, but not anytime soon. Sharp intake of breath, icy and surprising as a fluoro flicked on in pitch dark. Economical ascent solidifies into shards as it is drawn into the body. At this time of day, its sound could be mistaken for the face-stretching gulp that seeks air towards sleep. But it simply means yes. Yes, without breaking rhythm. Yeah. Go on. How to hear it without breaking rhythm.
The season of the low whistle.
This rhythm breaks not, but finds itself giving way on the exhale, releasing, grinding gently on its own impatience. Blowing coolly on its own unwillingness either to rest or wake too early, as if holding a too hot spoonful to its lips. Caught in inaction again, greedy to move, but heeding a voice that desires to hold on, to dispel the tension in downward glissando, wait. The noises of birds warming, wit-wittering, woo-woo-wooing the season into pale light, a reminder to observe conditions.
The season of...
Blue shadow shelters a careful gardener moving in the plain air of spring dawn. She goes so self-possessedly that the stillness doesn't notice her. She knows the posture of each branch, barely moving her gaze, feeling the steady changes morning to morning as dormant sap thinks about thawing with the growing light. The gardener is the careful receiver of news, the quiet inquirer cultivating sensitivity to the position of many beings. She steps toes first among the tepid spring roses, pruning before the leaf buds open, priming energy that it might better swell. But when she is pricked, listen cannily whether she is truly piqued, or whether she knew all along what surprise was coming to her. Perhaps it is she who has placed the thorns. As the ground starts to breathe again, a gardener's gasp inward can only be followed by a slow pissing out. The passing of gossip warms lips like coins warm hands, some social currency over cold sun breakfast. Swear. Who's where? Sneaking. Shh. The season of doubles, twice the faces to satisfy. Smirking Janice speaks one way, then the other, twisting over his smoothie, listen. Whispering out secrets like asparagus fingers poking out of earth. Keep it covered if you wish. Soon it will all emerge with a stinking psst.
The season of...
At the high noon of the year, no small corner of the mind escapes the daylight. Thoughts shed over the months, accumulating on sills, in carpets, and the cracks between floorboards, become visible, are swept up, inspected. Oh! Solstice revelations present an abundance of old material for reconfiguration. or for the trash. New space then, as the broad hours open up eyes to clear new routes and reconsidered options. Summer lopes around, sharing out surprises, exclaiming news to expend sunny energy. Oh. Whoa. Whoa. Not for now. Fresh forces make everything appear possible, even desirable. Potential for satisfaction glints off newly cleaned surfaces.
The season of...
Long days leave hours for loud thinking, for laying the tarot outside at the lunch table. The early afternoon light is the philosopher's bathwater, and in this season it is imperative to swim each resplendent day. 10 of cups and just as many glasses, nothing less than plenty to chew, sips between laps, lingering on in pools of whatever will stay the heat. Paddling through language from one card to the next, seeing reflections refract over and over in their own wake. Dark lenses facing the golden disc. This is the season of asking aloud. Answers evaporate off the skin. The calm body can float flat in water, but on earth must negotiate with 10,000 biting blades of grass to be able to stay still. Wouldn't it be better now to tread water? To move faster than the sun, if not further? Wonder. The bees won't cease with this song.
The season of...
But all the buzzing, all this asking outwardly, endlessly becomes tiresome. Energy ebbs, is generated more gradually than it is used up. The hum slows, the sap slackens. The shadows are reaching, the horizon keeping closer to the orb than it has been, and the afternoon stretches out toward the snoozing end of summer. The yawn of the year begins, a cavernous, gaping yawn as if to harvest the last of the year's warmth, to store it away before the sun's hibernation. Outside, inhale it, be greedy with oxygen and light, ingest it with apples, braid it into garlic, store it in dark moles and split ends, sluice it out with sweet wine and collect more tomorrow. Consume it, devour it, rinse tongue with it and bruise it against teeth, register the ruffled heat and orange light in blood cells and social media, let the tense muscles of the throat remember it with each yawn thereafter, a souvenir.
The season of sigh.
An air of deflation swirls around in evening shafts. The season of sigh catches the expelled voice in two vessels, pleasure and misery in equal measure. For some, missing, longing, or regretting, all the burdens of the mind forced out bitter nostrils from bellow lungs. Still, particles cling inside the throat, lodged. For others, dreaming and wanting and fucking, the mind forgets its separation from reality, dissolves itself into the atmosphere, a scent of it hanging in surrounding pores. The window panes against which these tiny clouds condense don't distinguish one from the other. They only collect, letting each stream together and pool, dripping. Now the nose streams too. Feelings leaking out a body's gaps, a sniff to snatch back some thought, hide it, save it. The season of sniff is the bad mood of the year. Season of cold wind and dark early now. The season of sniff is annoyed, dismissive, disagreeable, battering and permeating a hunched body. Body doesn't want. Body wants to keep boundaries. Season's gusts prevail.
The season.
Late on the night of the shortest day of the year, the gardener is to be found stooped in muddy furrows, wreathed in braids of allium. Moody winds have calmed, and at this apex of the darkness, she thinks ahead to the ohs, hmms, and yawns of the future. Yes, she looks forward to the sun, but for now she is content with the company of the moon as she sows. She thinks of the sharp gasps and heavy sighs, and can smile now that their flash of fire no longer rises in her, cooled off by dew. Each step, she scoops away a clod of wet earth, separates a clove from one of the bulbs she holds in her pocket, and presses it into the niche, scrapes a divot back over the top, tucking it away. Every few scoops, she crunches a clove between her teeth, mouth stinging, alive. She straightens up, belches, laughs aloud to no one but herself. No germs, no bad spirits survive this ritual.
The season of holding breath.
The season offers many options, most of them glimmering, collectively burnished, looking so fine against fresh snow. But the snow knows and invites us to admire the value of quiet. Watch these small parties, each one finding its own path through the air, dancing on its own till it finds rest among friends all silent. Cosmic disco tumult is noiseless. Aren't you tired? All this eyeing and eyeing, yipping and whistling, gasping and psting, ohing and hmming, not to mention the talking. Such huffing and puffing, when to even take a breath, yawning and sighing, sniffing and laughing, and you want to keep going? Go out then. Go out and stand, be still, deeply in through careful nostrils, and hold it. Let it fall and rest. Let inches gather and then feet of silence, and don't move. Let it soak in. The season of holding breath, of holding tongue, you can hear it, listen.
End of transmission, find us on the internet, radia.fm, over and out.